I'm Dave Freund, and I'm sitting here with Jim Beckman. Jim, I remember you as the chair of MACNY's board on at least two separate occasions.
That's correct.
Yeah. Glad to have you here. We're excited to introduce some new things that you're going to be doing for MACNY. But to begin with, let's find out, how did Jim Beckman, who is Jim Beckman? So where were you born? Where did you go to school?
Well, I was born in Philadelphia, a small town in eastern Pennsylvania. Went to Penn State, originally was going to be a music major, but changed my mind, went in engineering, into metallurgy specifically. Spent 6 years there, got an advanced degree, then came to work at Crucible in Syracuse in mid-1977, and worked for Crucible for almost 40 years.
Wow. So I do know a little bit about you that metallurgy is probably not your early passion in life. I think you weren't you like into the arts or something?
Well, originally I said was a music major, played clarinet and oboe, and was going to follow my older brother's footsteps into a career in classical music, but he convinced me otherwise that a better career would be in engineering, where I was pretty good in math and science, so I went down that path. But arts of all types are still a passion for me, have always have been.
Good. And so oboe, it's not like you picked an easy instrument to play.
Well, yeah, it is a difficult instrument. I haven't played it in probably 40-some years. Decided to, after I retired, to start out with clarinet, and had high hopes that I would become reasonably competent in a short period of time, but that was quickly dashed after about 3 or 4 months of struggling. So I put that aside, and I'm going to pick it up again at some point in the future. But my goal is to get back playing oboe someday.
Yeah, you need to, because and you know, I was a trumpet player. Right now, I still play once in a while. Somehow, people seem to find a way to get me to play at least once a year at a conference that our church goes to in the summertime. But you need to do it, especially if you have the time.
Well, it's also good for your mental health.
It is.
It's a lot of studies have been done on playing an instrument or singing or being involved in something of that nature. Helps to keep your brain in gear.
Absolutely. So you went into metallurgy, and how did you end up at Crucible after graduating with an advanced degree from Penn State?
Well, my father was a steel worker, actually, which is how I picked metallurgy. But I did my advanced degree in liquid metals and wanted to work in a melt shop. And back in 1977, many companies would not put a rookie in their melt shops, but Crucible, who had just built a new melt shop, took a chance on me, and they hired me into there. And that's where I started and loved it.
And so you were at Crucible, did you say 40 years?
Almost 40 years.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So what positions, I know you ended up as the president of Crucible, but what positions did you hold at Crucible?
Well, for a number of years, I worked in the manufacturing side as a metallurgist, and then enjoyed management. So I moved into the planning services area, and then back into the technical area of sales and marketing, product development, and then ran sales and then operations. And then in 2001, my predecessor had to retire due to physical ailments, and I became president in 2001 of Crucible.
Which job did you like the best?
At the time, I think I enjoyed running the company, because it was a challenge and it allowed you to use a lot of different skills, not just your technical background and the marketing, but you learned how to do strategic thinking, mm-hmm. strategic planning. You learned how to use your financial skills, because
I did
spend some time and got an MBA here locally. So it allowed you to take the whole toolbox, you know, mm-hmm. manufacturing, process management, quality systems. Use every tool in the toolbox at some point in time, and none of them get rusty. So it was a lot of fun. So I would say that was probably the most challenging and the most enjoyable.
Good.
But I do still enjoy the technical side of the business, too.
I know a lot of times in conversations we've had, you know, you'll quickly go to a technical side of steel making. We were talking about food because I know that you're quite a gourmet cook, and we were talking about food. Next thing you know, we were talking about knives. Next thing you know, you had taken me down the path of, you know, the finest of knives based on the steel that people use. So I know you have the passion for that.
Yeah.
If thinking back at your time at Crucible, what were some of the highlights of your career? Things that you were most excited about, passionate about, or proud of?
I would say a couple things. One, when I was working on product development and new alloy development in our premium product line, CPM, which is an acronym for Crucible Particle Metallurgy, helping to develop and market some new alloys was a lot of fun. Another thing that was fun, which followed probably the worst time of my career and the career of many people at Crucible, which was the bankruptcy in 2009, was coming out of bankruptcy and seeing a new company being reborn both culturally and from a manufacturing perspective too, and be successful.
Sure. Tell us what brought about the bankruptcy. I've heard the story, but our listeners probably wouldn't have known how that came about.
Well, one of the things I would always tell the group I work with was companies don't go bankrupt because they lose money. Companies go bankrupt because they run out of cash.
Right.
And Crucible originally was a part of the public company Colt Industries, and people know Colt as the gunmaker, as an example, up until 1985. And in 1985, Crucible became a private company using a financial mechanism called an ESOP at the time. Mm-hmm. And part of the ESOP was a significant amount of debt having to do with loans from banks and also taking on all the past debt of the pension funds. Mm. And so as time went on from 1985, that debt continued to grow. And when the banking crisis hit in late 2008, banks really weren't in a position to loan more money or refinance large financial deals. So the bank said no more money, and Crucible, because of the debt, had to file for bankruptcy in May of 2009.
Wow. That had to be, you know, you're talking about one of the highest parts, you know, emerging from bankruptcy, putting the company back together. That probably had to be one of the lowest ones as you entered into that scenario.
Yeah, I would, and I always tell peers in the industry when we would get together on business or conferences that I wouldn't wish bankruptcy on my worst enemy.
Yeah.
It's a horrible experience at any level and in any aspect because, A, there's so much loss of jobs, and complete degree of uncertainty going forward. So it's a tough time. And also, from a personal standpoint, it allows you to see what you're made of, and you're surprised to yourself. You can be surprised how much you can do and how much you can put up with, and what kind of intestinal fortitude do you have.
Sure. So how did you cope with it? I know that's a tough question.
I would say you relied on your peer group.
Mm-hmm.
There was a group of us that banded together, perhaps not by design, but because of the bankruptcy, that was, what do you call a support group?
Sure.
And we helped each other. And when one of us was particularly down, there was always one or two of the other people that were there to pull you back up, pat you on the back, give you a hug,
yep,
have a beer, a glass of wine with you, or a cup of coffee, and you march forward. And the second thing is you have to have a goal. The goal is to come out of bankruptcy somehow, some way. And for me, it was keep the legacy and the name Crucible alive.
Great.
In Central New York.
Sure. And I love that because, you know, your passion for the name, for the legacy, and your passion or your commitment to Syracuse, you know, coming from Philadelphia, one could quickly say, well, he's loyal to Philly because that's where he came from. But obviously your roots.
Well, I'm certainly loyal to Philly on the sports teams, and they've had some rough years. But I've come to love Syracuse. When I first moved here, people from Pennsylvania would say, "Why would you want to go there? All it does is snow. The sun never shines, and it certainly does snow, and we certainly have our fair share of cloudy days. But it's a small city with a lot of vibrancy. Certainly, as in any city, has a lot of issues. But I've really grown to like Syracuse, and I never realized till I moved to Pittsburgh, lived in Pittsburgh for 5 or 6 years, still working for Crucible. And then when we moved back, that's when I realized I liked the small city and I liked the community and I love the Four Seasons.
Same here. My mother used to tell me that I should be a spokesman for, getting people to move to Syracuse because I love it for the same reasons. There's a lot of vibrancy in our town. There's the day we're recording this is my wife and my son and I are going to go to Symphoria for the Pops concert tonight, the Christmas Pops concert.
Yeah, we're going tomorrow afternoon.
It's a small enough town, and yet we have some really high quality arts type things,
Well, I think having the university close, I think being reasonably close to large metropolitan centers such as New York City is an example. Feeds the arts, both the performing arts, which would be the Symphoria, the theaters, the local theaters, and the opera company. Mm-hmm. There's visual arts such as the Everson, and the Onondaga Historical Association, and just to name a couple. I don't think people realize how lucky they are to have such high quality culture.
Agreed.
In this community. It really is.
And, so those are a lot of the resources that we have here. And now I just kind of want to transition to where the offerings that you're going to be able to bring to our members here at MACNY is, this resource that we have of folks like you that have spent your career here developing businesses, saving businesses, rebuilding businesses, and wanting to give back. So, one of the things a lot of the folks that will be listening to this know that I do executive coaching, but we're bringing you in as like a mentor/coach type of person.
Yeah. I think you and I realized when we first started having this conversation that there is a difference between developing leadership and developing executives.
Right.
And if we want to keep a simplistic view of that or a simple view of that, you could say that a coach develops leadership skills. Mm-hmm. And leadership skills are one of a number of skills that an executive needs to be effective. Skills such as strategic thinking, marketing, product development, business planning, even things like lean manufacturing, quality, dealing with a board, are all other skills that I think are needed, and I think we agree that are needed to be an effective executive. And where we wanted to separate where our strengths were was your strength is in the leadership development piece. My strength would be in when we're calling it mentoring, which is really helping young executives in some of these other areas to help them be well-rounded and help them to be more effective.
Exactly. And I love the way you worded it. You do a great job of recapturing or capturing the thoughts that you and I have in our conversations so that we can start at the same point each time when we start over with new conversations. And as I'm thinking about it, the beauty of what you bring to our members is that you've been there and done that. And that's the key with mentoring. And what I love about your specific skills coming into Crucible with the technical expertise, working as a metallurgist, but then working in product development and then working in the marketing side. So could you give me just a couple thoughts about how would you approach a marketing challenge that a company would have?
Okay. First thing I would need to understand is what's the product or service that the company currently does? And then how do they go to market with it? If we're having a conversation, then there has to be a concern.
Yeah.
And the concern can be usually there's an impact on the financial and organizational performance. It could be something as simply as is the product at the later stages of its life cycle. Does the product need to be modified? Is the marketplace shifted towards something that's a little different and that the product is not addressing? So you need to understand what's the current state. And then the organization that you're talking with has some vision of what their future state should be.
Mm-hmm.
And your job or your goal is to articulate that or have them articulate that to you. And then do we have the resources and the wherewithal to bridge that gap between where they are
sure.
currently and where they would like to be? And do they have the skill sets to do it? And is it reasonable?
Right. Absolutely. Thank you. And I love that, again, you broke that down into very simple bullet points that I think are going to be easy for somebody to begin to wrap their thoughts around to assess, do they have an issue or a concern in this area? Strategic planning wise, how would you be able to help, you know, a young executive that I remember when I took over as the president of SelfLock, our chairman of our board said, you know, you need a business plan. You need to start thinking strategically. And I said, so how do I do that? And he said, in a great way, you'll figure it out. And that was the way he mentored me. He pointed me in the right direction, and I was thankful that it worked for me. But what kind of tips would you give somebody?
Well, first, when we talked about the various skills that an effective executive needs, and if you think of them in a pyramid, the bottom of the pyramid are the fundamental things. You know, do you need to understand the products and markets that you do? You need to understand the manufacturing. You need to understand the impact of business, lean manufacturing. And then as you move up this pyramid, I would probably put almost at the top, or if not at the top, strategic thinking. Mm-hmm. Because you can't just sit down and say, I'm going to do strategic thinking today,
right,
without having a pretty good idea of not just the hard skills that your organization has and the products and the physical attributes that it has, but what are some of the soft skills?
Mm-hmm.
If you want to take the organization somewhere, if you have a vision for a new product or a vision for a new direction or a vision for expanding your offerings, does your organization have the wherewithal to do that? And all these things are really subsets of strategic thinking. So strategic thinking is being able to sit down with all these things I just mentioned and say, can we do what I think we can do? And how do I test the theory? And do we have the wherewithal to do it?
Okay, great. Thank you. That's a great process flow, if I can call it that, for that aspect. So, if a young executive comes to you and says, "Help me figure out the financials of my company," I know that's a really broad question. What kind of direction would you give him? Like, he doesn't understand. You know, perhaps he's got auditors that are giving him information, but he really doesn't know how to digest it. Doesn't know what it all means.
Well, first I would ask he or she, what's your financial organization that you have within the organization itself? Mm-hmm. And what kind of information are they giving you? Because depending on the type of organization, you know, you have financial requirements for boards, or if you're a public company or a private company, for auditing purposes.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have a cash flow.
Right.
You have to have an income statement.
Yep.
You have to have assets and liabilities, a balance sheet.
Sure.
But to run the company, they're not necessarily the most effective explanations of your finances.
Sure.
So you need to come up with what best on a daily basis or weekly basis measures the performance financially of your company. So then at the end of the month or the end of the quarter or the end of the year, and you look back on a snapshot, which is your balance sheet, mm-hmm. your income statement, and your cash flow, it reflects your activity.
Right.
Your activity. So you can have financial activity versus financial reporting, and they're two different things.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't necessarily be too concerned about their cash flow, their P&L, and their balance sheet, because there's a standard way of doing that. I would ask questions, how do you financially assess your activity?
Very good. Yeah, I know we had a scenario where I worked where we thought everything was good. Cash was good. You know, the company was making money. And we had a major contract get pulled back inside by our customer. They had farmed it out to us. Now they were doing it themselves. Now they were going to do it themselves again. And all of a sudden, I was the plant manager at the time, and all of a sudden, the business is in trouble. And the business was in trouble because we didn't know where we were making money and where we weren't making money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we had a cash cow that we didn't realize was a cash cow. And once it was gone, you know, you're struggling to survive type of thing. And I think that I've heard that in some of my conversations with emerging leaders, when they're running a company and they really can't tell me where they're making money in their business, I try to get their attention. You need to figure that out. You need to mm-hmm. know what's profitable, what isn't. And I think those are probably some of the metrics that you're talking about here.
Yeah, there's a lot of techniques that can segment, you know, even using the standard P&L, for example,
yep.
that you can do product segmentation that way.
Mm-hmm.
The hardest part on all that is how do you assign costs?
Right.
And that's where you get into activity, because all these financial statements are just a snapshot.
Exactly.
Of every 30 days at midnight on the 31st or 30th, what does it look like?
Right.
It doesn't tell you how you got there.
Exactly. That's great. And I love, you know, I love the conversation we're having here, because we're just giving our listeners a snapshot of exactly the type of things that you're going to be able to offer them. And what we'll be doing, we're going to be taking this conversation once it's edited, and we're going to be posting it on our website. I think we'll probably also run it as one of the episodes of the Next Page podcast, because we've got those listeners as well, and we can get that information mm-hmm. out that way. Before I get to some closing details of how they can contact you, and you're going to be working as a subcontractor of MACNY, you're going to be working with MACNY, so people will be able to contact you through MACNY. You'll have a MACNY email address and those type of things. And those details I'll actually add at the end. So now I want to get to a little bit of a personal question. So what is Jim Beckman likes to cook?
I like to eat.
You like to eat. So is there a type of food you prefer?
Most of the training that I've had has been
so
in...
So now we're finding out he is a trained chef.
No. I've had some classes. is in French cooking.
Ooh, okay.
But I do enjoy lots of different types of cooking. It really depends on the mood and the seasons.
Okay.
Summertime is grilling typically, yep. and wintertime is not.
Sure. Right. Now, also, that's great. And I love to find those little tidbits of personal things. I also know that you are quite an experienced wine aficionado.
Wine drinker.
But one of the things that I really appreciated is I used to always get criticized. I had a boss that was from Switzerland, and he continually criticized me because I liked a sweeter wine. He goes, "You just drink all those girly wines." And I remember once having a conversation with you, and you made me feel good. You said, "Just drink a wine you enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
Don't worry about what other people say." And that kind of helped me
yep.
through that.
You drink the wine that you enjoy, and drink the wine that you're comfortable with the food you're eating.
Exactly.
And don't let anybody tell you anything different.
Exactly. So I wanted to throw that in, because that was just it was a unique thing for me. And it kind of helped me deal with what, and maybe the reason why it hit me so hard when my boss was saying that was because I viewed him as a mentor, you know, and I looked up to him, and he's like, "Don't criticize me because I don't like a Merlot, because I don't like a Merlot." Well, Jim, I'm glad that we had this time together. I think I'd like to be able to do this frequently, a couple times a year at least,
sure.
maybe three times
mm-hmm.
a year. I think this is a new thing that we're going to be able to offer our members, and maybe over time we'll be able to get some other of these treasures within our manufacturing community, these resources that we can also
mm-hmm.
sit across the table from me. So
I think that's great.
Thank you so much. I hope you have a great day and a wonderful Merry Christmas, Happy Holiday season.
Same to you.
Thanks, Jim.
Okay.